Thank you. Thank you all for joining me for a few minutes. I'm going to stop a little bit early today. At noon, Senator Schumer and I, along with Senator Graham and others, will be having a media opportunity to talk about the Free Flow of Information Act, which is essentially the Media Shield Bill, as an updated version of legislation that I worked on in both 2007 and 2009, passed the House both times, has yet to become law, but with the recent developments at the Justice Department and frankly followed up by Justice Department guidelines that would change the behavior of the Attorney General himself, this is a act, this is a law that I think has a better chance of being enacted now. We deal with classified and unclassified information a little differently than the bills in the past, but essentially it says that the punishment is not for the reporter who's asking questions, but for the individual who provides information that they have somehow become obligated not to provide. So this addresses those issues and others. It also creates a way where a reporter in who has national security information can be required under certain circumstances to divulge that information. This is a law that protects journalists from doing their jobs. One of the challenges in this will probably be defining exactly what a journalist is in today's world, but we think we can meet that challenge. At noon, Eastern Time, we'll be having that press opportunity at the radio and TV gallery in the Senate. It looks like Blunt, Blumenthal, Isaacson, Klobuchar, Tester, Graham, and Schumer will be doing that, and so I hope to be over there about the time that starts. And then at 12:30, I'll be talking to another group in Washington to begin to talk about an act that that Congresswoman Lynn Jenkins from Kansas and I'll be introducing in the next few days to the Citizen Empowerment Act, which frankly will give citizens an opportunity to record conversations with the IRS and other government officials that they don't currently have. It also would allow people who have their power of attorney to have those same rights. Right now, the government has capacity that individuals don't have, and I think this will help level the playing field in that action. I think Congresswoman Jenkins will be introducing the specific bill on tomorrow or Friday or today. She's doing it today. We're doing it on the Senate next week. So that's a 12:30 opportunity to begin to talk about this with groups who need to be supportive of things that level the playing field between individuals and the people who are regulating or investigating them at the federal level, I'll be doing that. We can talk about what happened this week in the Senate regarding the nuclear option, beginning of the process of turning the Senate into a legislative body that, like the House, really doesn't have to consider the rights of the minority. It is, as I said at our leadership news conference yesterday, a tradition, a time-honored understanding of both the Constitution and the Senate, that the Senate was the place that should guarantee that every voice could be heard on the issues that matter. It's something that at the founding of the government, while Adams and Jefferson didn't agree with very much by the late 1790s, they agreed consistently on this topic, that the Senate had a place in this process where the big states and the small states were represented equally, where every member had a right to have their views heard, moving toward things that have traditionally been under the Senate rules that could require up to 60 votes, to where they'd only be things that could be done with a majority makes some sense unless you understand the constitutional framework of the Congress. I think our meeting this week in the old Senate chamber created a time when senators had to listen to each other and did listen to each other, and at the end of the day stepped back from the moment we were at that would have began the process of changing the Senate in more ways, I think, ultimately than just nominations. As an example of that, I've still got a hold on Gina McCarthy. I think some in the majority are beginning to understand that hold and stepping in to see if they can help encourage the administration to do what they agreed with Senator McCaskill and I they would do. In fact, they're the ones that set the deadline for March 15th about a big project in Missouri, but it's not a project that's anywhere close to being built or determined or spending money. This is about the environmental impact draft on a project that would affect the lives of lots of Missouri families and a lot of farmland, a lot of acreage in our state. President continues to talk about how Obamacare really isn't having any negative impact. The press secretary Jay Carney just yesterday said that the reports that employers were hiring more part-time workers because of Obamacare can't be supported by the data. I think absolutely it's supported by the data. I see some of my colleagues on the other side, like Senator Harkin, are questioning how the president can legally just decide that we're going to not implement big parts of this at the time that the law requires, and particularly when you continue to implement other parts of what the law requires for health care. And so let's talk about whatever you want to talk about, and I've probably got about 15 minutes that I can do, I can answer questions here.
Thank you. At this time, we're ready to begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, and you'll be announced prior to asking. Also, please state your name and your affiliation. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, to ask an audio question, please press star 1. One moment for the first question. Our first question does come from Deirdre Shefgreen. Your line is open.
About the defense authorization bill. And Senator Gillibrand, it looks like she's got some new support for effort to remove the chain of command from sexual assault cases in the military. Can you just talk about, you know, your on her proposal versus the proposal that Senators McCaskill and Levin backed?
Well, and I backed that in committee. That was the proposal that we put on the this part of the defense authorization bill. I will tell you that the Republicans today at the steering committee lunch, it's going to be one of the topics we talk about. I talked to Senator McCaskill about it this morning. She has been a leader on this because of my committee assignments in both now defense authorizing and defense appropriating. I've gotten more involved in it, but I think the McCaskill bill is the better of the two approaches and would intend to continue to support that effort. It does make some modifications of the current structure, but fundamentally realizes that command structure in the military matters, it has there's a reason that it matters, and a reason that the commander is involved of all aspects of how that unit, that brigade, that flight wing is run. I think that Senator McCaskill and Senator Levin and others have made a persuasive case on this, and my belief is that view will, at the end of the day, prevail.
So you don't agree with the contention that it's better to have an outside investigator handling these complaints and removing the personal connections that the commanders might have?
I agree with Senator McCaskill's view of this.
Okay. Our next question does come from Gentry Trotter of Multimedia News. Your line is open.
Hey, how you doing, Senator?
Gentry, I'm good. How are you today?
I'll stay real fast at home a little bit. As you know, on June the 28th, Jim Buford, after 28 years, retired from the Urban League. This morning at 8:05, the diverse board of directors of the Urban League elected the current license collector, Mike McMillan, as its new chairman of the board, or as its new president and CEO. And I just wanted, I know you know both of these guys, and I was just trying to get a little flavor with Mike only being 41, the same age about when Jim started 28 years ago when we hired him. And I'm just wondering your thoughts about either one or both.
Well, I do know both of them, and Jim Buford has done a tremendous job with the Urban League. He's been a real leader in bringing the community together and being a wise leader of things that we needed to do as a community, and that stretched to our state. Mike McMillan understands what it takes to bring people together as well, and I think that the board's decision to bring in another guy who might serve as long as Jim Buford verifies the pattern that Jim Buford set, and also probably verifies that diverse board's view of the skills that Mike McMillan brings to this job, and I look forward to working with him, and I look forward to the things that Jim Buford can continue to do to be part of moving our state and our community forward.
Our next question does come from Rob Koenig of St. Louis Beacon. Your line is open.
Hi, Senator. I saw that you were at the Commerce hearing today on Internet gambling.
I was.
What's the situation in Missouri? Are you concerned that there'll be an effort to legalize it in Missouri, or on the opposite trend, is there an effort actually to stop Internet gambling in the state?
Well, I think the question here is what happens if you have unregulated competitors. I'm much more concerned about that than what the Missouri Lottery might decide to do or what kind of licensing process might go on. I worked in 2006, we passed a law that we thought solved this problem, and it did solve this problem to a great extent based on the interpretation of the Wire Act up until last December the Wire Act had been an act you could use to regulate betting. Last December, the Attorney General decided that, well, no, actually the Wire Act only applies to sports betting, which really created a Wild West environment. I think that was it may have been December a year ago, but anyway, there's a new interpretation of the Wire Act, and I need to check which December it was now that I'm thinking through that. But it's created a Wild West environment out there of offshore and other unregulated gambling sites. Gambling is something that at the very least should be regulated, and everybody should understand those regulations. We heard at the hearing today that this has become one of the most used tools to launder illegal money, as well as a way to encourage gaming by young people and others who have no business being in that gaming environment. And it's an area that I think should be regulated, I'm convinced it's an area that would benefit from some overall federal regulating scheme that all the states benefit from understanding.
Our next question does come from David Helling of Kansas City Star. Your line is open.
Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, David.
A couple quick questions. First, as you know, the defense sequester, the furloughs of civilian defense employees under the sequester sort of went into effect a couple weeks ago. I wonder if you have any concerns about the impact of those furloughs on both readiness and also, you know, a lot of military people work in smaller communities and they really rely on the purchasing power of those civilian employees, particularly in Missouri, Kansas, other states. If you have any worries about that. And then a general reaction to the report today that under Obamacare, premiums will go down 50% in New York for those who don't have insurance.
I want to see more about that last topic. It's the first estimate I've seen that there'd be a significant decrease in premiums, but I'll be glad to look at that. I would question it. On the other topic, you know, one of my big first of all, sequester is an imperfect solution and an imperfect enforcement tool. But at the end of the day, it's better than no enforcement tool at all. There's no ability to convince most people, at the majority at the federal level apparently, to stop spending money at, in amounts we can't afford. This does save significant money over years. I think the solution ultimately is to save that money on the other side of the budget by looking at the programs where the money is really being spent and figure out how to reform those programs so they last. But short of that, Dave, I think sequester is going to be part of the process for the next few years, if not the entire 10 years. And we'd be better off if we prioritized in a way that avoided sequester. I think another mistake that was made in putting the structure together was in the totally worthy goal to not make military families and individuals suffer as part of the ability, the lack of ability of Congress to control spending. The uniformed personnel were exempted, and that's created a division in the workforce that, in the way the military works today, is hard to defend. To where the civilian employees that are working alongside the military employees, and in some cases even in uniform. The civilian employees are in uniform because they're guardsmen working at the ABCRAD in Springfield, or they're working at the guard location as a civilian employee in St. Joseph and other places, as well as Whiteman. That you create a division there that isn't helpful. I am glad that the military figured out how to minimize the number of days. Stretching those days out over a long period of time would have been better in all cases, and even better would be just appropriating the dollars to the money that's available appropriated, and then you don't have sequester. We don't have to have this happen in January of next year, but the Congress continues to be in some level of denial that that there's going to be a there's going to be a solution that is a grand bargain, and I think there is no grand bargain to be had with this president and this Congress, so we should figure out how to obey the law.
Our next question does come from Brian Kelly of KMOX Radio St. Louis. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. First off, on the spending issue, Senator, by the way, good afternoon or morning. The $34 million that was spent on a base in Afghanistan that the military didn't want, that's probably not going to be used and could be torn down. Senator McCaskill went off on that this morning. What are your thoughts on that, and what should the Senate, what should you guys do about that wasteful spending there?
Well, our exit from Iraq was terrible, and our exit from Afghanistan appears to be headed in an equally terrible direction. On the knowledge of this being the knowledge of your question, we shouldn't build bases anywhere that the military doesn't want. The building of facilities in Afghanistan that were never going to be used is something that shouldn't have happened, and Congress and taxpayers should be outraged about that, and we should have a process that doesn't allow that to happen. I got time for one more, if there is one more.
Thank you. Our next question does come from Paige Sedgwick of KQ2, St. Joseph, Missouri. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. So the vote on a student loan bill is pending for today. When is that going to be happening, and what do you expect, Senator Blunt, the outcome to be?
Well, I'd like to see that happen, and I'd like to see the student loan situation resolved so that all the families that use the student loan program benefit from whatever the result is. The proposal that I've been opposed to would only impact the subsidized Stafford loans, as opposed to all of the 11 million families that between now and the time school starts in the fall are going to be looking at student loans and figuring out how they can pay those loans back. I know there was a meeting with some of my Republican colleagues and people in the administration late yesterday afternoon to see if we could resolve this. actually, Republicans in the Senate are closer to both the House and the administration, I think, on this issue than Democrats in the Senate have been. And it's an easily resolved issue. There are about three possible solutions here, all of which we should be able to figure out how to rally around. But the best of all those solutions is the one where all 11 million families are helped, and all 11 million families are considered in the understanding of what their loan is going to be, how long that interest rate is going to last, which I think should be for the life of the loan, and how they are able ultimately to pay this loan back so they can go to school, or so their kids can go to school. Thank you all.